dbkmediaservices.com. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk Podcast. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. Now, here are your hosts for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk, Shane Combs, Matt Combs, and Jeremy Ward.
Hello, SVC fans, and welcome back to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk online radio show. I'm Shane Combs of SVCSportsZone.com, and want to thank the fans for a great week of feedback. I know last week was one of the bigger shows in the history of our show, and it was by far the biggest show of this fall. And we talked a little SVC All-League Volleyball and some other things, and the feedback was coming from all sorts of directions. So looking forward to just kind of continuing some of the discussion, even have some new things that have come up that I think that are going to interest a lot of people from a lot of different angles here in the Cider Valley Conference. Joined, as I always am, by my brother Matt and good friend Jeremy Ward. You know, guys, with 2 weeks remaining here in our fall shows, we'll do this show and then two more following week 9 of football and week 10 of football, which will take us up to hopefully some state tournament volleyball and some other things throughout the fall seasons. I got to look, and you know, with golf done now, cross country, we have a huge list of teams and individuals heading to the regional. I mentioned volleyball, got a couple soccer teams that won a sectional title, which is very difficult to do in soccer because it's a little bit more of a strenuous test in terms of rounds and some of the other sports. And then obviously the football picture starts to take a different clarity week by week. And you know, Matt, with fall aside for a second, I guess I wanted to start with you on something that I've been listening to from a lot of different people. Is, you know, a lot of times maybe people that have grown up like you and I did, we were such basketball junkies and it was so important to us and the culture that we were in. You know, basketball around the corner, I don't want to say we ignored the fall at this point, but it certainly got to a point where, you know, the weather started to change, the basketball conditioning would start, you knew practice was right around the corner. How is that different for you now as a coach, as I know you're a huge sports fan of all high school sports, as you get to this time of year when, you know, basketball is obviously starting to grab your attention 100%. Talk to the fans a little bit about that balance here this time of year.
Well, I think it just goes to the individual of what they put their majority of their focus and passion toward. I know, and obviously a lot of it has to do with what school you're at and the success of those teams. You know, if you're at Uniota right now, you know, it'd be hard, even looking at basketball, it'd be hard not to be pretty excited about the potential of the volleyball team and the football team's having such a great year. You know, but maybe if you're at another school where your volleyball team's out of it and football team's not having that good a year, maybe you're already kind of turning your focus to the winter sports. So I think a lot of it just comes kind of down to the individual, really.
Jeremy, it's always neat to see the how high the preview show that we do with each of the seasons, that how high they are. You know, it's one of those things in the preseason, everybody's undefeated, everybody has a chance for that great year, and then as the year goes on, it's hit and miss. You know, maybe it has a lot to do with the agenda, like I said there in the opening, last week's show was a huge numbers, a great following, you know, just kind of hit and miss. But it's interesting to follow that in terms of the attitude of the fans. Just your thoughts here when you look at the difference in attitudes of people you talk to from the various schools, from the preseason, say, to the halfway point to tournament time.
Well, it is interesting. I mean, obviously, at this point, you do, you know, you start talking percentages, and you even alluded to this earlier that, you know, you right off the bat, you're cutting half the teams out of it by this week in volleyball. You know, at this point in football, you have a couple teams with potential postseason aspirations, but that's pretty much it. You know, soccer, golf, all that kind of winding down. It's funny, but the great thing about high school sports is even if you are ready to turn the page, that excitement just turns to something else. So it's not like, you know, if you're a Browns fan or a Bengals fan, and you know, you've got to kind of have those quick aspirations of grandeur, and then, you know, be shot down and forced to live through that as NFL season goes forever. You get to turn the page when you're a high school sports fan, and there's another season on the brink. So that's kind of the great thing about it. Even whether it's middle of the season or end of the season that your hopes are dashed, you always have something else to look forward to as, the calendar turns to the next sport.
You know, guys, one of the conversations that seems to come up a couple times, maybe even three times a year on SVC Sports Talk is, you know, talking about the best program around the SVC, or maybe which one is our best league sport. I even had one that was talking about best set of coaches. And when we get into all this, I always like to look at the process of it, the factors that go into decision. I mean, I guess for a lot of people, it would be winning, be it games, leagues, tournament runs, whatever. But the one thing I thought was really unique is to look at the longevity of the coaches in a league and how are they able to reload in terms of, you know, obviously over the course of 10, 15 years or whatever, you think you're going to be hit by graduation. How's your JV team? How's your junior high program? How's your little league program continue to cycle through? And I guess when I look at program, I mean, Adina Volleyball, Uniota Golf, we've talked about some of those. It'd be hard not to start with those. But when I look at I'll go bias here for a second. When I look at the baseball league of the guys I coach against, the longevity of coaches is something that jumps out at me in terms of the variety of teams. You know, what's maybe a particular program or a particular sport in our league when you think of longevity of coaches, or you look at maybe where an identity has started to take over? I'll start with you, Matt. Like, when maybe pick out an SVC sport, be it because of the coaching staffs around the league or maybe some of the programs or the different things that maybe an identity jumps out at you as, hey, that's exactly what I think of when I think of this particular league in the Scioto Valley Conference.
Well, I would think, you know, if I broke it down by season, I think I would have to say the strongest season we have, talking fall, winter, or spring sports, would be spring sports. I just think, you know, our softball last year had two teams, one team win a state championship, one team be right on the verge of that. We've had state champions in track. We've had baseball teams making it to that level. So I think as a whole, it's the spring kind of, for me, has that SVC statewide recognition, I guess. And I think, but I do think volleyball too has developed an identity also. I mean, this is becoming pretty normal stuff to put, you know, multiple teams at the regional level for SVC volleyball. And I think there's some excellent coaches in the volleyball league. And I think our volleyball league in the SVC is way above most leagues in our area.
Well, I can't doubt that at all. I think most people would agree with you. Jeremy, let me throw this your way and look at it this way. When I looked at the longevity of coaches, I think we've had 5-6 different baseball schools go to the regional in like the last 5 years. How do you compare that, maybe the balance from top to bottom, against maybe the volleyball, where maybe at the top is a little bit more lead? How do you balance maybe, and I want you to have an opportunity to give your answer as well, but maybe touch on this. How do you balance the elite level teams at the top of the volleyball league against, say, a baseball conference or even a softball conference that's probably a little bit more balanced when you get down around 3, 4, 5, 6?
Well, that's a good point, and that's why, you know, my answer, you know, sport-wise would clearly be baseball, because I think the depth of talent top to bottom is stronger in almost any given year. You know, like you guys both said, the past success, the tournament success, speaks for itself. Longevity of coaches has a huge, plays a huge part in that. And even some of the newer coaches, if you think about it, in the league, in the baseball league, are guys that have been around athletics in the SVC, maybe at other schools or in other capacities, for a really long time. So It's just a different ball game. I think you can throw volleyball in there from the top half perspective. You can throw softball in there from the top half perspective, but I don't think the coaching is nearly as good top to bottom, and I don't think the level of the programs are as good top to bottom. And a lot of that has to do with just the fact of, having that commitment, people sticking around, having a little more consistency with teams having JV and complete programs top to bottom all the way. I guess that is the biggest factor in my decision as far as that goes. I don't think that you can discount basketball, because I think the passion of the fans and the passion of the community in Ross County and the SVC is still basketball.
Well, Jeremy, that's an interesting point, so let me stay with you on the girls' side, and then Matt, I'll come to you in a similar thing on the boys here in just a second, because this is where I wanted to go next. I've had so many discussions with people about basketball and about some of the different things that lead into the discussion of best programs and best leagues and so forth. Jeremy, would you agree that, first of all, I've always said basketball is the hardest sport to develop a kid. It's almost going to come last, because you've got to have a kid who can dribble, pass, catch, shoot, defend, rebound, where maybe in volleyball you're a little bit more specialized. And if you go back into the 90s, girls basketball had really gotten ahead of its time in this area. I know in about a five-year stretch at one point back in the early 90s, I want to say the SVC had about five or six girls go Division I, just trying to think off the top of my head. I think there was at least five. And as time started to go on, maybe the AAU circuit started to slowly die off, or maybe it started to spread outside the area where club volleyball started to take over. And a travel softball, which you can talk to us more about, has been huge here of late. Do you think it's a little bit more of the specialized sport, where maybe it's something that all kids can get into? Do you think it's just a little bit more enjoyable to do? Is it fair to say that it's just easier to develop at? Is it just easier to play? Just your thoughts on how basketball maybe has started to die off in terms of the off-season development, and these other two major sports, maybe even indoor track, has started to take over and pull kids away?
Well, I've always felt that, basketball seems to be, one of the quickest sports that kids get into when they're young. It's relatively inexpensive. You don't have any trouble finding recreational type leagues. And, as far as a number standpoint, much like with a T-ball or a, 6, 7, 8 year old baseball, softball, you have hundreds and hundreds of kids around the county playing. And the sooner you start, the sooner you move on to other things. And I think a lot of times what you see is kids start out in, baseball, T-ball, basketball.
Sure.
But as they get into that junior high age, or maybe even the fifth and sixth grade range, when they've done that for 4 or 5 years, that's when they start picking up maybe the specialized sports, and you get kids going to cross country at that point, or you get kids getting really into volleyball on the girls' side, where it just becomes, I don't know, really culturally in the area, it's really become, the popular thing to do. And there are multiple club organizations. And when you look in other areas outside the major cities, they don't have near as much to choose from. So you have so many more schools having the opportunity to have kids playing, from that middle school age on up, and you certainly see the difference. And kids do have to choose. And I think from a girl's perspective, when you're looking at girls basketball, and I would certainly agree, 15 years ago for sure, girls basketball in this area, was far better than it was in the surrounding conferences, and Superior and the other sports. But now, volleyball far surpasses that.
Well, Matt, let's pull it over to the boys side for a second, because I guess it's a little bit the same with football from a standpoint of specialized. If you take a kid sophomore, junior, that's never really played, if he's an athletic kid with some size or quickness, there's probably something on the football field they can do, where it'd be much more difficult for you as a basketball coach just to randomly take a junior out of the hallway that's never played before and get him to be able to play in a varsity basketball game. talk to us a little bit maybe about on the boys' side when you were growing up and some of the changes you've seen on how maybe how football and some of that specialized situations has maybe pulled more kids aside and where boys' basketball kind of ranks in all this in the Cider Valley Conference.
Well, I think what's happened in sports in general is all the off-season choices kids have and off-season expectations, I guess, coaches have of kids, too, has really increased over the last, you know, probably 15, 20 years. I mean, when we were kids, I mean, you went to some open gyms in the off-season, and then you played basketball. Once basketball's over, you played baseball, you played some summer baseball, and so forth. There wasn't quite the expectation of coaches needing kids to be at shootouts and team camps and things of that nature, and then having to make choices between playing some Legion baseball and going with the basketball team, or and the football coach wants him in a 7-on-7, and so there's all kinds of things pulling kids in different directions now. And I think sometimes I think you can be a three-sport athlete, but you have to have great time management and great commitment. And I think it's just easier to just specialize in the thing you think you're the best at. And most, most people take the easiest way. If they feel like, hey, I'm really good at this sport, well, I'm going to put my time into that. I'm not going to be running all over the place all summer long and not get a chance to do anything I want to do because I'm playing three different sports. So I think that causes specialization a little bit. And I think it has hurt. It has hurt all sports probably, but it's hurt basketball, because I think what it does is the kids that love basketball are going to play it. The kids that the diehards that work at it really hard. But your kids that sort of enjoy it, they can walk away from it and go do something else. Does that make sense?
Right, especially with it being in the middle there, because it kind of puts the back sports on them. Yeah,
and that's why you got half the teams in the league can't put a JV basketball team out there, and we're playing two quarters because we're losing kids. And I think part of the reason we're losing kids is we're throwing way too much at them in the off season, saying you got to be here, you got to be doing this, you got to be doing this. It'd be nice to allow kids to be well rounded multi-sport athletes.
Well, Matt, let me quickly here before we move on to the second segment this evening. Let me just ask you here: when you've been around the SVC for a long time, with the growth of volleyball and softball, do you think that's where girls basketball went from what used to just be incredible to now a sport that's maybe struggling for an identity? And on the boys side, you think how phenomenal the boys league was in the early 90s. And then maybe it started to dwindle a little bit. But now with maybe football starting to bottom out a little bit, maybe starting to see a little bit of a boys basketball reemergence here. What do you think in terms of its emergence here in terms of where it was, say, 10, 15 years ago?
Well, I think the boys basketball league is very, very strong right now. I think a few years back you had some turnover in coaching. You had some legendary coaches stepping away, going other places. So you had a lot of new faces coming in. And you had a lot of young coaches, and those young coaches now have grown into their own and become in a lot of cases really fine coaches, and they're building programs. And so now you're seeing that take off. But I wish I hate to think that one sport has to suffer for another sport to be great.
Sure.
And maybe that's reality. I don't know. I wish it didn't have to be that way, because kids are only going to be in high school for 4 years, and I just hate to see them feel like they have to specialize. And I think it's our job as coaches to encourage. I'm not – when I watch my best player playing football on Friday night, that doesn't necessarily excite me. I stand over there thinking, gosh, I hope he doesn't get hit. I hope he doesn't get hurt. But when he comes to me and asks me about playing football, I tell him, yeah, go for it, man, because he's a kid. We should be supporting kids to go play other sports. And I think sometimes as coaches, we get a little selfish and say, come play my sport, and that's probably what needs to change.
Well, this is good stuff, and I know that we'll get some good feedback, and I'm sure we'll talk about it a little bit more. But I think
Shane, Shane, go ahead, one Jeremy. Other thing, it, you know, kind of leading into the football discussion, there's a lot of concern across the country and, you know, about the numbers in football and all the negatives that have come with the concussions and the injuries and, you know, and then, you know, the NFL, some of that luster starts to wear off with some of the stuff they've gone through. But there's a lot of concern about the declining numbers in football. And, you know, I'd be interested to hear the fans' perspective on their thoughts, how that affects our area or just in general.
Well, I think that'd be a great thing to get feedback on. And I think it's kind of a nice transition here as we get in the next segment, talk about Paint Valley, how I think there's a lot of Paint Valley kids as well as a lot of kids throughout that have proven that it is okay to still be a three-sport athlete and it can be done if you're just willing to put the time in and work at it. So, you know, SVC fans, I know I'm not much of a computer points guy, but you know, rumor is 1-8-2 SVC team needs to prepare to host, and one potential 9-1 team may be on the outside looking in. We discuss this in 30 seconds. Well, guys, I know it's falling into place for Paint Valley and maybe not so much into place for Uniota, but when you look at Paint Valley starting to stare an 8-2 season and probably a gold ball in the face, you look at the way their defense, we've talked so much about their offense throughout the year, but I just think their defense is really becoming the story in the conference. You know, now they look at 2 weeks remaining. I know I've seen the Python team without their quarterback, one of the top 2-3 offenses in the league. They're shut out this past week. I do think the Berkheimer kid's going to be a really good one right now. Probably just not quite the dual threat the Brewster kid is, and it really kind of limits what they're able to do with Frim during the read option game, and then getting Thacker and Southworth involved on the outside. And then week 10 will be Huntington. They're in the Maple Leaf game for Paint Valley. So obviously you want to take it one game at a time, but we kind of get the luxury in the media or just as fans sitting around talking to kind of start to peek ahead. And at 8-2, looks like that four spot's going to be theirs with a chance to host. But on the other side, not falling into place, that's for Uniota. And I think the shame of this for Uniota is obviously they're a bigger school and enrollment showing its ugly head here again in the inbox. But they are a really good team with a great defense. The week 11 hope's not looking good, but I think 9-1 still a giant step forward for this program. And I hate to see Uniota take a knee jerk reaction in terms of their scheduling just right away. I think they need to understand this is a positive step into next year. So, you know, Matt, I'll start with you. I know you probably look at the computer points more than I do, if we're being honest. So you can probably give us an interesting perspective here. But certainly things looking up for Paint Valley and not so much for Uniota.
Yeah, I mean, Paint Valley is benefiting obviously from every week they play, they're beating a bigger school, and that certainly helped them being a Division VII school. And it looks like they've got a shot if they can win out to host a game, and that'll be great for them and their community. On the Uniota, and the Uniota thing really interests me. Excuse me. That last year, I want to give you guys a couple numbers. You know, I love stats, but in the last 2 years, there's been out of what other 700 schools or something in Ohio play football. The last 2 years, there's been two teams finish 9-1 and not make the playoffs total, one each year. So you're talking about if Uniota finishes 9-1 and doesn't make the playoff, which I think looks very likely, that is very, very rare. Last year, I think I did a quick count. There were 58 teams that finished 9-1. One of them didn't make the playoffs.
Wow.
Yeah. So it would be a very bad break for a Uniota program that would be quite deserving of getting to play in week 11 with the season they've had. But I do agree with you, Shane. I think the last thing in the world you want to do is overreact to it. You know, Uniota, this will go down as, I don't know, probably the best, if they finish 9-1, which they still got, they got a couple games there. I know one against a good Zane Trace team, but yeah. Let's just say for the sake of argument, they go 9-1. That's probably the best season in Uniota in what? That's got to be almost 40 years, maybe since the early 80s. I don't think they've had a team go 9-1. I believe they went 8-2 back when Hartsock played.
Yeah, 7-3 in the 90, well, seniors of 95, which had been the 94 season. I believe they were 7-3,
right? So if they can finish this off and go 9-1, that's something that's historic for them on a school level. But I think a lot of knee-jerk reaction will be, well, we play in this league that's smaller than us. You know, here we go. We finished 9-1. We don't make the playoffs. Well, it was a perfect storm. You know, let's face it, you know, they played two like-sized non-league schools in Vinton County and Greenfield that have won one game between the two schools, I believe, at this point. They had a league full of teams that didn't do well in the non-league. The SVC had a terrible non-league year this year, in my opinion.
8-16.
What was it?
I believe it is. 8-16 was our non-league record throughout.
Well, take Uniota's 3-0 away, though.
No, that's true. Good point. Right.
You know what I mean? So they're not getting any help. They're
the
not
five
getting any
wins, basically, from the other
right.
Seven
they've got
schools.
Five wins between for the other seven schools that they can feed off of. And so, I mean, I guess what I'm saying, it was a perfect storm. You see what I mean? It was just everything happened exactly right to put them in this situation. And a good friend of mine is really, really good at kind of crunching these numbers. He doesn't think it looks good at all for them right now. But, I mean, maybe, you know, maybe something crazy can happen and some teams in front of them can get knocked off. But if they don't make it, I still think they've done something to catapult their program forward to where all of a sudden if they'll stay the course, they can start winning 7, 8, 9 games every year.
Well, some of those teams in front of them, I was looking. I know there's 6, 7 teams that could realistically lose a game in the next 2 weeks, but it's looking like about 5 or 6 of them are going to have to lose both weeks, and I just don't know that that's going to happen. You know, Jeremy, when I looked through numbers, I was curious on computer points on this. I mentioned the 8-16. I know a year ago we were 7-17. Then you go back to 2012 was actually one of our better years in the league when we were 13. In 11, I believe, and then 11-13 before that. You go back to 2010, it was 9-15. And I guess with the SVC only winning about 40% of its games, I see a lot of multiple opponents showing up, and I see a lot of scheduling of the extremes. I see some teams that when they're going 3-0, they're beating teams, maybe going on there and they go 1-9, 2-8. But then I see a lot of other situations where we're scheduling at such a high extreme that we're 0-3, 1-2, with really not even a chance to compete. Now, a Paint Valley like this year can get away with that because, again, as Matt said, they're an established football program who in the league is going to play themselves into the playoffs by playing the bigger schools. But does it just come back to a little bit of a scheduling issue? I know we don't want to have a knee-jerk reaction, but it is something that when you look at the Side of Valley Conference, it is probably a set of schools that by Southeast Ohio Conference is one of the smaller in terms of the overall enrollment, which kind of does put Uniota in a little bit of a pickle. But I was just curious to get your take on some of the scheduling philosophy as you hear some of these numbers that Matt's throwing out, and then I'm throwing out the non-league records from the Side of Valley Conference.
Well, I think the numbers that you really have to look at are just the historical numbers. And when you're thinking about scheduling, you know, I know if you go talk to football people outside the area and they look at this region and they think, well, first of all, this region is full of football tradition. I mean, you know, close to home, you look at Miami Trace, you know, a little further southwest and you've got Clinton Massey. They haven't done much over the last couple of years, except win 2 state championships. Cincinnati McNicholas, Kettering Alder, Circleville, Bishop Fenwick, Minford, Jonathan Alder, Germantown, Valley View. I mean, they're all in this region, and those are football schools that have had tons of success. And, you know, it's easy to say, well, hey, you know, why aren't you playing Miami Trace? Why aren't you playing Circleville? They're in your region. Why aren't you playing Clinton Massey? Why aren't you playing Jonathan Alder as an independent? They're always looking for games. But at this point in time, you know, if you're winning 7, 8, 9 games 3, 4, 5 years in a row, then I think you can say that and that's legitimate. But, you know, I think you guys made the perfect point that it takes time, and this is, you know, maybe this is step one, and it is a bad break in this region. You know, last year maybe it was a flip side for some of the conference teams that, you know, just barely won enough games in some regions that didn't have a lot of depth, you know, and then you get lopsided matchups and you know, once you do get to the playoffs. But, you know, all in all, I mean, it allows you to play, go into the next year with a little chip on your shoulder, which doesn't hurt. You're in a great position to win your last, you know, what, five or six games, to build that momentum. And certainly a lot of these kids are going to have some success in the winter and the spring seasons as well. So, you know, going with a little chip on your shoulder, feeling slighted, you know, maybe that's the best thing for the Union of Football program if they do happen to finish 9-1.
Well, good football discussion here. I'm anxious to get some feedback on the football side. I know with what Union and Paint Valley are doing, it obviously takes you back to the play of the year to this point, which has to be the block field goal that Tegan McFadden picks up and runs in, because basically that's a tied football game that those two were playing there in week four, where – you know, the football game is basically tied with about 10 minutes ago, and that play kind of swings not only that game, but really kind of the entire shape of what we're going to remember, I think, is the 2014 football season. So when I look across the league, I see, you know, Dean is kind of a mystery to me. Huntington getting a lot better, but they're getting into some of the tougher part of their schedule now. I know Southeastern can't say enough about how they keep improving with their young nucleus. And you know, Westfall's kind of a tough thing to look at because it's just something we don't recognize. You know, them simply rebuilding for the first time in a long time. And then Zane Trace, here we go again down the stretch where there's another year where they continue to get better. But the kind of a tough non-league schedule kind of puts them. And so each school kind of gets me analyzing them in a different way. And I think it'll be interesting to watch weeks 9 and 10 play out, and then looking at probably most likely Paint Valley into the playoffs. So we'll look forward to some feedback there. So, well, guys, I'll tell you what, I doubt the next segment will have everybody agreeing, but at least it can help us agree to disagree. Volleyball fans, and that is from both the top three teams and the bottom five teams. Stay with us. Well, guys, I tell you what, we mentioned at in the intro there that this was one of the highest listened to shows in the history of SVC Sports Talk. And when I was given those numbers, it certainly did not surprise me because of all the email topics, the phone calls, the SEO prep conversation, face-to-face feedback. I tell you, it's just coming from everywhere. And I do put a lot of time into my OSVC squad that I put together each year on SVCSportsZone.com. So I certainly appreciate that. All joking aside, I really appreciate the feedback. And I encourage people not to be afraid of discussion. Again, we're always going to talk in a classy way about the young men and women that represent our side of Valley Conference. And I think through communication, the beauty of all of it, no matter what you think, the beauty of it is within conversation, you end up getting 40, 50 names of kids out there and highlighting what they do as student athletes. And you do the same for the programs and the coaches that put the time in and so forth. So it's just, it ends up being a positive win-win for all involved. And you know, Jeremy, the biggest thing probably in the discussions probably came from the Huntington Southeastern and Zane Trace selections. And I wanted to explain my angle. I didn't do a very good job of it probably last week. I made the comment about how the top three teams have to be careful sometimes just evaluating a kid based on how they play against the top three teams, or the two times, say, a Uniota fan or a Nadina fan would see them play. And I guess that to do a better job of explaining my angle is this. If you have an elite hitter, let me just use Alex Chafin from Zane Trace because she was one that made my second team last week. If you have a kid like Chafin who does just, I think, an incredible job at the net, a real athletic kid, I watched really take over some matches in the middle to bottom half of the league, and it allowed me to really see her full skill set. What I meant by you have to be careful at the top three is she may not always get the opportunity to do that because Uniota and Adina, they may be serving or attacking at a level that perhaps Zane Trace, just as an overall squad with their youth, is unable to pass and set in system enough for her to do it. A great example of this is I had a chance to go out and watch the junior high consolation championship night. I really enjoy doing that every year to kind of see what's coming up in the league, and I love watching the younger kids play. Southeastern had an outstanding middle hitter, and I apologize to the young lady because I don't know their names, but she was nice. I mean, for an eighth grade level, she really got off the floor and hit the ball hard and really attacked the net nicely. But throughout the course of the entire match, Adina's ability to serve tough at two or three spots and to kind of come on the attack better than most eighth grade teams could, Southeastern wasn't really able to pass and set the ball at a level that allowed that girl to take over the match. Now, in watching her the 5-6 times she did get the swing, it was obvious to me, well, this girl is a high-level eighth grade hitter. But if you were to only watch her play against some of the higher level teams, that may not show up as much as it did against some of the lower level teams. So I guess that's just an example of what I meant by that in terms of how that might affect a hitter. And I know that the same could be said with the passer and so forth. I agree that it hurts them a little bit. And I think that shows up on my list because I had the top three passers within about my top probably 15, 16 kids. But Jeremy, as you hear me explain that angle, listening to the show back, I didn't do a very good job of that last week. I hope that clarifies a little bit, at least where I'm coming from. Just some of your thoughts there on maybe evaluating those kids that are playing more into the middle of the bottom half teams.
Well, you know, I guess you can, regardless which side of it you're on, you could argue that somebody that gets fewer opportunities on the really elite teams, aren't able to show maybe that if you put them in that spot on a team where maybe they're the number one hitter, that they aren't just as capable as some of those kids. So I think you could always look at it that way, that, you know, when you go to the fourth or fifth player on, you know, maybe the top three, you could easily argue that they might even play a more important position on one of those other teams. And it just shows their value because they can play a more specialized position because the people around them are that good. You know, I'm sure we have, you know, it's no different than other sports. You've got to play where your team needs you. And at the end of the day, I think the list here on SVC Sports Zone was much more complete than the actual list from the standpoint that, you know, just like you've said, and I know on the internet and in face-to-face conversations, a lot of the feedback agreed that, you know, you just have to recognize more kids. It's pretty much as simple as that, because really the only loser I see in all of this is the fact that, you know, the actual all-league team just doesn't include enough players.
Matt, is that probably the fair point that's going to end up coming from all of this? I mean, we're going to have great discussion, and at the end of the day, if we're only going to name 16 spots and we all think that there's anywhere from 18 to 21 kids worthy, obviously there's going to be a handful left out. Is that really the bottom line of the discussion?
I think it is, and I think that's where it needs to go. I mean, you know, we heard when we had the discussion about the expansion, we had some ADs call in, you remember, and we had some people from other schools call in. And the thing that jumped out is I think a couple of those people said, we do, you know, the one thing we always want to keep in mind is do what's best for the kids. Well, I believe that to be true. But in doing what's best for the kids, if that's really our mindset, then you can't convince me you don't honor more kids. You understand what I mean? If we're doing what's best for the kids, let's honor more kids in a league that's absolutely loaded every year.
Well, and the other thing that came up was, talking about how, you know, with the three Huntington kids named, I think a lot of that has to do with the format, again, with the specialty vote. Obviously, just about everybody I talked to didn't have much of an issue with Lytle being a four-time defensive player of the year. So with that specialty vote, that kind of starts the vote over, if you will. I think if Lytle's not named in that specialty role, or if our league did not have that, I don't think you would see three Huntington kids. I think you'd probably only see two, and that in itself is a whole nother discussion we'll have another day. I guess for me, it was my list and it's my opinion. If I'm going to name 21 kids, when I look at names like Chafin and Gregg and McGill and Goble and Lytle, Those are elite players, agree or disagree. That's just the way I feel about it. Now, the one thing I did want to clarify was some nice comments came in on Jenna Hutton. But there were a couple that were concerned maybe about singling her out the way I did. I hope everybody understands that was to be a very positive highlight of a special talent in our league that went through an injury situation. And Jeremy, this goes back to what I said in the opening. I think sometimes we get so scared of communication. We live in a society where we're so afraid that, you know, we're going to hurt somebody's feelings or whatever. I was wanting to use that situation not only to highlight a special talent, but to also open up some communication to all sports in our league in terms of how are we going to handle this? Let's have some open communication to where it can bring some knowledge and some ideas to the coaches so that we can share. Because the one thing I get concerned in our league is sometimes we get in a standstill a little bit. And I think we can use these things to kind of open some lines of communication and maybe set some ideas on how we want to handle unique situations, can't we?
Oh, I think that's absolutely true. You're talking about high school athletes and you're trying to find ways to, build them up, that sort of thing. So you're not trying to single them out in a negative way. So anything that we're doing to bring attention, you know, is definitely meant from the positive perspective. And the fact that we can talk about so many kids in so many situations, it's really just drawing positive attention to the athletes. And that's really the goal of high school sports and the goal of the website and our show.
Well, the final thing that probably showed up in the inbox was the difference in the consistent philosophy with the all-around player compared to maybe the kid that only plays half the rotations. I know this probably showed up more on my list just because it's a philosophy of mine, whereas on the coach's list, perhaps they have a different way of looking at it. And again, that's just the beauty of the opinions that are out there. I know the Westfall kids with Fox and Wallace, that's an interesting discussion because both of those kids are very, very valuable to Coach Rogers and what the Lady Mustangs are trying to do. So, you know, that's another discussion that you just kind of keep your eye on moving forward into the tournament on how they're both very valuable in the role that they play. And, you know, speaking of tournament, Matt, I guess before we move on, I guess I'll just get your take. When you're watching sports or some of the teams you've coached a little bit, do you see that – as we move into this time of year, that tournament has a way just to bring it all back to the team anyway and the focus in terms of the task of one of those special runs?
Yeah, I think so. I think when you get into tournament and kids know that it's sort of that, survive and advance mentality or there's no tomorrow type of thing. I think it naturally draws you together a little bit as a team. And then the further you go, you probably develop that even more because the uniqueness of it and all that. But, I think it's one of those, it's kind of odd, you know, at the end of the year, we have the individual honors, but really you're most concerned about team at this time of year. You know what I mean? Especially if you're one of those teams that thinks it'll advance a long way. But I definitely think that would be fair.
Well, Jeremy, because of all the feedback we had in volleyball, we kind of have a double volleyball segment this week. You and I are going to get a chance to play a little fair unfair as we move from the individual honors to the team goals. Fans, you were asking if volleyball sectional titles mean the same as they do in other sports. If I'm being honest, I chuckled when reading some of these emails. So stay with us and we play a little fair unfair next. Guys, we had a couple questions, kind of the fair, unfair variety in the inbox. And with them being involved in volleyball, I thought Jeremy and I would play a little fair, unfair with Matt. You getting a little follow-up question to kind of give us a little bit of perspective from the Southeast District or just from a coach in general. So, Jeremy, let's take a look at this first one. It said it is much easier to win a volleyball sectional title compared to a title in other sports. I'll start with you there. Fair, unfair, and why?
I think that's unfair. Back to the fact that our league has a little higher standing than some of the surrounding leagues makes it look a little lopsided. And certainly for our league to win sectionals in volleyball, it is much easier. But I don't know that has to do with, anything other than the fact that, that just tells you a lot about the elite level of the players and the teams in the conference.
Well, I think it's crazy unfair. Now, I follow it. I understand, and you went down the right path there, Jeremy. The matchups and the talent around the area, but that's not volleyball's fault. I think we've even spoiled some of the programs. I mean, goodness, what did I see the other day? Adina, I think like Ronald Reagan was the president the last time Adina wasn't in the district tournament or whatever. I mean, it's like 26, 27 in a row or something. But that's not SVC volleyball's fault. I mean, it's crazy unfair to punish them that they've just worked their programs to a point here in our league that puts them heads and shoulders above everybody else in the Southeast District. So I certainly think, as a coach, knowing how hard it is to get your program in a point to win a sectional and then to do it 2, 3, 4, 5 times in a row, now in 26, I think that's just crazy unfair. And in fact, I think Matt, I think the fans have almost become spoiled. I guess I'll ask you a two-part question just because I'm curious to get your take on this. I think some of the fans have almost become spoiled of, well, I'll just go watch them play when they get to the district final or whatever. So I'd love to get your take on that. But then my actual question for you was the new seating format, I guess, has kind of made it easier to win a sectional title in all sports now than say it did 15, 20 years ago, because the league used to beat up on each other more. And I know they tried to do that to avoid some district blowouts or to get some better, maybe talk to fans through why that happened. And I know you have some things you'd like to see build off of that here in the years to come.
Yeah, in terms of the fans getting spoiled, I think that happens everywhere. I just think it does when they're so used to a certain team or a program winning all the time. They just kind of take it for granted. I mean, you hate to say that, but it just is. I just doubt any average volleyball fan at Adina, woke up the other day, man, phew, I hope we get out of this sectional. They probably just knew it was going to happen. And I'll go catch them when they make the regional. But so that happens everywhere. But to your point on the seeding, I think the whole idea of the district wide seeding, and this is not the way it was years ago, but the district wide seeding, the whole idea is to get your best teams, to give a district its best chance to get its best teams to the regional, or at least to the district final, so you have your best matchups. That's the whole idea behind it. I think, our district's three quarters of the way there. That part of it is correct. The part that's incorrect is we still seed teams by geography, which you risk not getting your best teams there. Right. And we've talked about that before. I'm not going to get into all that tonight. But basically, that's the idea. We want to get, as a district, we want our best teams to face off in the district championship, not in the sectional.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And I think, Jeremy, you and I are on the same page there. Let's see if this next one we agree. One fan says that the top three are not tournament tested because the bottom half of the league is not as good as many non-league teams were there, say, maybe this year compared to last year. Would you say fair? Unfair.
I think I'm going to go unfair here as well. First of all, those three teams get to play each other. Secondly, I think Adina's lost some games outside of the conference, which would tell you that their non-league schedule is also awfully strong because they're a pretty complete team and pretty dangerous team, and they do have some losses. UNYOTA's been pretty dominant in their outside of the league, but they also easily handled a couple one seeds. I mean, Courthouse was a one seed in their sectional. Wheelersburg was a one seed in their sectional. You know, they set it up usually so they're playing an Eastern Beaver. Teams like that. I mean, I don't think it's their fault that some of the schools on their schedule had a down year, but it certainly comes to question, is there a way to make that non-league schedule a little stronger? You may be able to say the same for Westfall, but you know, they go north in the non-league and try to play a stronger schedule and play bigger schools, and they've been pretty dominant in their non-league as well. I think, again, it goes back to being spoiled. You know, our middle of the pack teams, yeah, they're middle of the pack in the SVC, but they're pretty dominant in their non-league schedules as well. So at some point you have to realize that, you know, are you expecting our teams to go in the city and play D1 private schools? Because, I mean, outside of that, we're pretty stinking competitive no matter who we're playing.
Well, Jeremy, I guess I'll say fair that Huntington, St. Trace, Penny Valley Pike, Southeastern may not be as good this year as they were as a whole last year, but I think it's extremely unfair because these guys have been there, done that. I mean, I even think with a lot of experience in the tournament from years past makes them tournament tough, makes them tournament ready. And, you know, and looking at those football stats from earlier, I also looked over at the volleyball to give me a comparison. Our volleyball league has won just about 80% of its games outside the conference in like the last 3 years. And I think that right there tells you everything you need to know in terms of being tournament ready. Someone asked me earlier this week when we got talking about the all-league selections, is it time, if Huntington has the talent that people say they do, for them not to come under the same type of criticism that maybe I'd put the Uniota group on when they were younger? And I got to thinking about that, Jeremy, and I think that's fair, because it's a group that obviously does have a lot of elite talent and has the ability. But I think because they play in the same conference with these three elite teams, that's probably protected them from that criticism. I think that criticism is going to come more in the years to come. And because of that thought process, I guess I look at these three teams as being tournament ready because of everything they've went through in the past couple years to lead us to this point now. So, you know, Matt, when you hear me answer that, I mean, don't you think there's some truth, regardless of whatever your schedule might be, you know, this year, the fact that you have a team, say, as a coach, that's been through the tournament run over the last couple of years, doesn't that experience have to be something they can draw upon to really help them in what they're getting ready to face in the next 2 weeks?
Well, I don't think there's any replacing that tournament experience, you know, because when kids go through it for the first time, it's very unpredictable how they'll handle it. But when you get back there for a second time or a third time, depending on the situation, then kids are much more relaxed. They know what to expect. They have a higher expectation. See, you know, sometimes expectations aren't high enough. You know, you go into a tournament situation and you think, oh, man, I wonder if we can compete with this team from another town or another city. Well, once you've been through it a couple times, yeah, we can. And it becomes a whole different ballgame. So if you're asking me the difference between tournament experience or what kind of schedule you play, I'll take tournament experience every time.
Well, again, great discussion there. I thought the volleyball needed the double segment just because of all the feedback we are getting on the volleyball side. And that leads us this week, guys, into our two-minute drill. It was such a busy week in the SVC. I thought I'd use the rapid fire here to help us move through it. This week, we stay with our own question. Matt, you'll take that first one, and Jeremy, you'll go in the middle, and I'll take the final one. Let's see what Bruce has for us this week.
The district cross country meet had 8 different races to sort through to find all the SVC teams. In the end, it was a very successful day for the league. The format of the Southeast District in cross country is blank in your opinion.
Beneficial.
In boys soccer, Uniota and Zane Trace captured sectional titles over the weekend. Add this to the growing programs at Edina, Piketon, Southeastern, and Westfall, and this could mean blank for the SVC in the future.
Very little.
One fan this week was interested in last week's discussion about how the league goes about decision-making in looking at all the things, big and or small, that you would like to see the SVC consider. The key to the process is blank.
constant evaluation and communication guidelines. Well, Matt, let's go back up to the first question here. I looked at it as a weird yet fair way to go about it. I think what happens is we do have such an enrollment discrepancy in our league that when you get some of these teams and they're able to split away from each other, you start to say, wow, you know, these guys are elite and they can compete against these schools. Well, then they get down to the smaller levels and all of a sudden you see an Edina and Huntington girls team move on and so forth. So when you say beneficial, I think that's some of the stuff you're talking about. Explain it to us.
Yeah, I mean, the less you have to beat up on each other means the more possibility you have to get teams out. You know, one of the reasons, like in volleyball, we get teams out is because we have them spread out over a couple different divisions. You know, you don't run into them and have to beat up on each other. So I think it's just beneficial anytime you get more kids to the regional level.
Well, Jeremy, when I read this list to you, the Edina girls get out. I think they were second. Huntington girls were fourth. Piketon boys are your champions. The Uniota girls are your champions. The Uniota boys were runner-up. Zane Trace girls runner-up. Huntington has an individual boy. Payne Valley has an individual girl. Southeastern has an individual boy. Zane Trace has an individual boy. So when you hear all of those things, obviously the beneficial word that Matt uses is correct, but it also kind of just does let you know that when the SVC splits out of its own conference meet, where maybe the conference meet's not all of that competitive top to bottom, you do see that our conference definitely has a little bit more to offer.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, you know, the depth of talent and the overall success that the conference has in the fall is really remarkable. And, you know, I don't know if some people would argue, well, if, you know, you had a stronger football league, maybe your other ones wouldn't be as strong. Maybe that's true. But, you know, like it or not, there's a lot of really good athletes running cross country. There's a lot of really good athletes that participate in fall sports in the SVC. And, you know, it doesn't end at that sectional level or that first round of the tournament.
Well, Jeremy, let me stay with you here on question two. This came from an SVC fan, I assume someone who's into soccer, so I definitely want to give it its due here because there was something that had at least come to my mind that I thought was worthy of discussion. I got to thinking about this, and when I looked across the league, Matt and I grew up in a culture in the SVC where Uniota and Zane Trace already had soccer, so they're used to it, or their enrollment or their athletes or their athletic programs are just kind of maybe already in sync with it, and they realize it's there. As a new sport comes into some of these other schools, I just wondered if you thought it could impact football a little bit. I know Edina is a school that's had soccer going here for a little while now, and I know there for a while they were 6-4. They were 7-3 overall with a gold ball in 2010. In 2011, they were 9-2, and they were in the second, and then they went to the playoffs. Where here recently, they've gone to a 3-7, 5-5, and they're currently 2-6, looking at maybe a 2-8, 3-7 type of year. Now, maybe that's just a rebuilding coincidence or whatnot. I just use that as an example because I just wanted to get your take. Do you think the growth in soccer, say over the next 5 to 6 years, could hurt some of the middle of the pack teams in our SVC football, and maybe help, say, a Uniota or a Zane Trace continue to climb up in football?
Well, and with my answer, you know, very little. I guess in terms of the near future and it becoming a league sport, you know, I think you're just going to have to look a little deeper and allow those programs to build a little more consistency. Now, on the flip side of that, I think in the short term, maybe the football programs do struggle a little bit. And, you know, when you have smaller schools, if you have three kids that have to make that decision coming into junior high or maybe even into high school and what they're going to play, that can really impact,
sure,
you know, whatever they don't choose. And you know, a lot of times it varies class to class. And if you get, you know, a couple key kids that kind of are influential, where they really are committed to a sport, and, you know, maybe they have their three buddies that, you know, they could go either way, but since this is what, you know, my best friends are doing, I'm going to go play soccer too, or I'm going to go play football too. I think that swing from year to year is definitely a variable that you have to consider. But in the long term, if schools like Edina and Piketon and Southeastern and Westville, if they're going to maintain soccer and maintain the numbers for soccer, you're going to see that split happen at a younger age and not quite see the impact on football, because kids are going to probably choose that path a little sooner. And you don't have that, you know, okay, well, we were playing soccer in the spring and playing football in the fall, and then all of a sudden in eighth grade, I was a quarterback and now I'm playing soccer. Well, yeah, that has a big impact. I think you're going to see that split happen when they're younger, if their soccer programs continue to solidify themselves.
Matt, that's a really interesting point. I know you and I grew up in a time in the SVC where Uniota and Zane Trace, yeah, sure, they were two of the bigger schools. And in football, people always wondered, why aren't those two any better? And, you know, maybe soccer did or didn't play much of a factor. But as you see soccer start to stretch out over another four or five schools here, do you see this impacting the football league at all, or is it just, you know, you see it more like Jeremy's saying, where it's going to happen more at the younger levels and it'll even itself out?
Yeah, I mean, long term, I think Jeremy has a good point there. I do think in the short term it could impact the football league a little bit, though. I mean, it's just simple numbers. If you take schools that already have less to choose from than the majority of the other schools in the league, and now you say we're going to present another sport where it takes a few more athletes away. Yeah, I think it could. We've talked about it in the past. You know, we've talked about a school like Edina, you know, in the past being so good at some things, but there's also some sports that they didn't even have for a while, like cross country, you know, where so they were able to focus their athletes into a smaller number of sports and therefore compete with the bigger schools. So I do think soccer, at least in the short term, could hurt some football programs.
Well, guys, we close the show here with our third question. I was talking about constant evaluation and communication guidelines, and this is something we've talked about before. Yeah, I've really become a strong believer here that we, and when I say we, I'm meaning the SVC, we do it really good, and I just want to make sure that we continue to do it better and moving forward continue to be the best. And, you know, coaches are asked to do so many things, in my opinion, beyond coaching, you know, uniform inventory, collect transportation fees, handle emergency medical forms, sort details for secretaries, treasurers, principals. You know, I guess why not allow the coaches to have a little bit more of a voice on league policy, directly influence their sport, at least. You know, so guys, I love the communication. I guess the frustrating thing for me, it's probably when I ask these questions, no leader really has an answer. I guess that's where I would like to move with this, in terms of I hear some cliches. I hear kind of maybe being swept under the rug a little bit. But I know the word scares people sometimes, but I think power is a word that is the bottom line. It takes power to make some choices. So I think sometimes I've left some rooms with eight frustrated coaches across the league where they want to see something happen for their league, and it's just a tough situation. So Matt, I guess I'll ask you, I know we've talked about this a little bit in past weeks, but when you look to move forward in the league, if you had that power to make the decisions move forward, how would you like to maybe see some of the communication and some of these guidelines change, maybe from the way you know they are to what you'd like to see them be?
Well, you've talked about it. You've mentioned communication and open discussion a couple different times tonight. I just think the decision makers in any league, the league that I deal with as an athletic director, has the same issue, where your board of control in a lot of situations, the people making the decisions, the principals, superintendents, or whatever, what's it hurt to sit down and talk a little bit with at least your experienced coaches? You know what I mean? When you're making decisions. To me, if I were in that position as a decision maker, and I was going to make a decision on volleyball in the SVC, it would be pretty arrogant of me not to at least consult Laura Smith. All right. Now, I mean, am I not at least going to consult a lady that's been doing this long and may have some insight into what I'm trying to do? And to me, again, I don't know whether people are scared of communication or whether it just takes too much time. And, well, I got to make this decision. I don't have time to meet with people or make phone calls. I don't know. I can't say. But I just think that the more thought you put into it, and I guess the more advice you get from people who really live it and know it, can't hurt.
Well, Jeremy, I want to be fair to all sides here. I know I get frustrated because of maybe the position I'm in, but I'm going to ask you here in closing the show to maybe be fair to the other side. If this is the guideline in place, is it possibly more the fault of the schools of – if this is the guideline of – is it maybe the school's fault in terms of the coaches and the principals, the athletic directors and the superintendents at these individual schools, maybe breaking down these lines of communication? Just trying to be fair here on both sides. Are you following where I'm going with that?
Well, you know, I think the goal of any leader, whether you're the leader of your program, whether you're the leader of your school building, your athletic program, or the leader of your school district, communication better rank pretty high on your list of priorities. Because if you don't communicate effectively, you know, what your expectations are, what the goals are, what your vision is, where is it you want to go? If you don't know where you're going and how you're going to get there, you know, who are you taking with you? And, you know, regardless of your role, I think each of those people from coach to athletic director, principal, superintendent, you know, they do play a role. It may not be a huge role, but they are expected to communicate with one another. And, you know, yeah, you might find that, you know, you get those four or five people together in a room and they have, you know, very, very different opinions and very different visions, but right. At least they're on the table. And, you know, I'm going to guess that at some schools that does happen. Mm-hmm. And it's just the coaches or the athletic director's vision of things might be, you know, different from the principal or superintendent's. And I'm guessing at some schools, you know, there's just a complete lack of concern or just a hierarchy of trust that, you know, you just worry about coaching, you just worry about scheduling games, and we'll make the decisions, you know, that affect the bigger picture. So I think you get a mixed bag across the board from school to school. But the communication, you know, that's paramount, and you've got to include everybody. Like you're saying, you know, you want to go to the people that have a stake in the game. You want to go to the people that have the experience and get that information from them and that perspective from them to make the best decisions for the student athletes. And I think that was the resounding words that we got when we heard from principals and we heard from leaders of from around the league, you know, when we asked about expansion. So, you know, you definitely hope that they're looking at it from all angles.
Well, this is a lot of fun to have these talks, and I hope the fans give us some feedback. I would love to get some more administration feedback, just to get more sides of it, maybe some coach feedback on what they think of this process. So it's been a lot of fun tonight. Look forward to another great week next week. Let us know on Facebook, Twitter. You can also call the number. It's 740-569-3254. Let us know anything you want us to talk about. Give us a little feedback, some questions, concerns. Well, guys, until next time, for Triple Crown Family Fun Center, for Bruce Knox and all the fine people in at DBK Media Services, for Matt Combs and for Jeremy Ward, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportsZone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC, 100% of the time.